Hello, and welcome to Good One, a podcast about jokes. I'm your host, Jesse David Fox. This is a bonus episode. Think of it as an addendum to the big Trump comedy episode that also came out today. If you haven't listened to that yet, I'd recommend it, but you know, it's all just interviews, so you don't have to listen to them in any order. It's not like watching Kill Bill Volume 2 before seeing 1. You know, they're freestanding. They're two people talking to each other. You'll get it. While the main episode focused on how Trump affected the comedy of five unique comedians, Hayes Davenport's story is different. Trump's election put things in motion that would lead to Hayes leaving comedy full-time. He still hosts his beloved cult comedy podcast, Hollywood Handbook, a favorite of mine. But in 2019, he quit his gig as showrunner of the upcoming TBS sitcom Chad to work on an LA City Council campaign. Regardless of political comedy, his move raised interesting questions about the potential of comedians in politics. So, here is Hayes Davenport. So, I'm here with Hayes Davenport. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Jesse. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
You as well. So, the question I've been starting all of these off with is, was Trump good for comedy? Why or why not? And what does good even mean?
Good to me means not this question. This is the worst question. There is no good way to answer it. Was Trump good for comedy? I would honestly say the effect was pretty neutral. I think the percentage of comedy that is good is about the same as it was before. And the stuff that had a much bigger effect was technology and like platforms.
Yeah.
I think moving towards podcasting, like various types of democratization in the same way that like for a while it was late night was new and like that was a way for comedy to get out there. And then the format became kind of stale. And then like stand-up had a renaissance, but that stuff, I think it doesn't really matter who is president.
Yeah.
Most of it is always bad, and some of it is okay.
So to back up, what was your sort of political involvement before the 2016 election?
So I had never really been involved. I went to Nevada with a bunch of friends to help people register to vote. In LA, you just like have to drive for 500 miles to do anything that seems politically significant. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I had always been interested in what was going on at the city level and like urban planning stuff and tried to read local news. And then when Trump got elected, I posted on Facebook. This is like what a crazy mental place I was at. I went straight to Facebook to do a post, something I don't think I had done for like 4 years. And was like, on the same day, I really needed to convince myself that like something was going to be all right.
For some reason, in the haze, no pun intended, of that, the end of that, after that election, your reaction to it is the only reaction I remember.
You remember that post?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, I remember you tweeting about all this stuff. I truly don't know why. Which is why so now explain that this thing you did in desperation connected to a person who's also just looking for anything.
Total desperation. I think I cried in the shower and then, like, got out and booted up Facebook and posted. So, on the same ballot as the Trump Hillary race in LA, was a ballot measure to put $1.2 billion in a sales tax towards housing for people who are homeless, mm-hmm. and also one to fund a big transit expansion, which in LA historically has not really. LA, dating back to the 50s and 60s, was like a really reactionary, conservative place. And like this stuff, even for a place that's considered very blue, is locally hard to do. And they both crushed. Like they did extremely well. Mm-hmm. And I just like pointed to that and I was like, this is good. We can do stuff here. There's a lot that can, like, I have no control over this other. So, like, people are asking, like, how did this happen? And it's just like, what are we can't do anything about this is what it felt like to me. But 10 million people live in LA County. It's bigger than all but 8 states, I think. 4 million people live in the city of LA, and it just felt like what I said at the time. I was like, this is what I'm going to be focused on now. Yeah. This is like what the next 4 years are going to be for me.
Did you have any thoughts about comedy at that time? Just sort of where you were at? Like,
no, never. Where I was at. So at the time I was mostly doing TV writing. I had started, Sean and I were doing our podcast, Hollywood Handbook, at that point already. But here's the thing that, in terms of like platforms and, different types of media, how it has changed. Podcasts are when you, certainly the ones where you just like sit down and like talk for an hour, yeah, are not super time consuming. Mm-hmm. So they can be like, they leave you time to do other stuff, like post on the internet and like do it. Like that's what most people like fill that time with. But it, it made other options feel possible. So basically like, I had been writing for a while, and like between jobs, I started working with a homeless services nonprofit called SELA. Through that, I met one of the people who founded it, Nithya Raman, and we became friends. And I had a showrunner job on a show called Chad, which is coming out this year, and was a great show. It was a wonderful job. But we shot the pilot, and it got picked up to series, and we had this 3-month kind of in-between period after the pickup and before the room started. And I had really been like throwing myself into the homeless services work and just felt like this will be tough to leave to go do this show, which will be like very consuming for a long time. And we were going to shoot in Vancouver at the time, ended up shooting in Portland, but I knew I was going to be gone for a while.
Got it. Yeah.
And then Nithya told me, I had been talking to Nithya and suggesting that it would be great if she ran for city council, which in LA is uniquely powerful. We only have 15 council members for a city of 4 million people. You in New York have like 700 or something.
Yeah.
Like it's like it's meaningless. Yeah. But here they have a huge influence over policy around homelessness and stuff. So I've been like, it would be great if you did this. We were hitting a wall trying to get anything out of these same people. So it's just like, you just do it.
Yeah.
And then one night we went to get a drink at a bar, and she told me that she was going to run for the seat, and I was just like, I cannot miss out on this. This will be so fun. And so I quit my job to volunteer for the campaign, and she won.
Yeah. Spoiler, that was three questions out of the But what was that decision like to quit? Either was it an internal struggle? Was it in like what when you told your friends, your team? Like I should note for those, like, this would be your first showrunner job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like this is like hypothetically what you have been building a career towards.
But I got the one episode, I got the pilot as EP, and that's like how many title cards can you fit in a frame? You know? Like you only need the one.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, of course it was really tough. I mean, like telling my friends was so fun, and still is. It was like, oh, you're still working? Oh, yeah, I threw away my career to actually volunteer to support homeless services policy. It's rocks. It's like amazing. I've really enjoyed it. But internally, it was like, shit, this is stupid. This is really stupid. I enjoyed the other work. I knew, and now in retrospect, I am so glad I did it. I knew like I would not enjoy it anymore if Nithya was off running this campaign and that other work was happening, and I just didn't have time to do it. That would have ruined the job for me.
Yeah.
But it was my wife who really pushed me. My wife Geneva had me sign a contract that is hanging up somewhere. I think it's in the bathroom now. That said, I promise to like commit to this decision and to do what I love and what I care about, and I'm going to quit my job and go do this thing. And so that, like, she was so, so supportive. And the fact that I kept doing the podcast all the way through, that made it feel like, okay, here's a little like a financial cushion, to make this easier.
What did you end up doing for the campaign?
I was a volunteer. I never had a title, just so I could kind of like stay flexible. But I was basically like an advisor, senior advisor, I guess you'd call it. I sort of looked at, I worked on the comms, fundraising, and policy. And the Nithya's campaign put out these really unusually robust policy documents around like what the powers of the city were and like what we could do to how we could do things differently. And I think what I tried to bring to it was, from the writing background, this stuff is usually very hard to read.
Yeah.
It's boring. It sucks. And so like, how can we make something that's not like, it would have been bad if we tried to make it like a comedy piece,
sure, yeah.
But how do you just like convey information in a way that's compelling and people can kind of latch on to, because that's the only way you're going to get support behind these different things.
What did you expect from the experience, and sort of what surprised you about either what it was like or what you got out of it?
I got so much out of it. I was surprised. First, I was surprised. It was a lot harder than I thought it would be. There was this definitely a really shitty Hollywood attitude of like, oh, we'll show up. It's like city politics, and we're like TV writers. Like, we'll show up to this and just like dominate. And that did not happen at all. People did not support the campaign in the early going. We had no institutional support whatsoever. It was a really, really difficult slog all the way through. It took almost 2 years between the primary and the general. I thought we would had a chance at winning outright in the primary, which we didn't really get close to. We did really well, but not close to getting the majority that you need to avoid the general election. And so then by the end, I was just really surprised that we won.
Yeah.
Even like the day of the election, I was like, this was great. I had a wonderful experience. We're definitely not going to win. But what I got out of it, I mean, one thing I think, talking again about format changes, that made it so appealing, even compared to TV, it felt like a show running job. Not that I was like running the campaign, but like the stuff that you're doing, you're just like constantly having decisions come to you. And like you're reporting up to like this person and down to that person. Like, but the satisfaction of being able to put something out on a very immediate basis is tough to replace with TV. TV, you sit in a room for 8 months and then you shoot it for another very long period of time. And then it's a half hour. And then you like search Twitter to see what people said about it. And some people talk, maybe it's hard to search. And so you never even really know what people are saying. And like I worked on a show called Great News, and I always wanted to be like, oh, what are people saying about this show? It's like, oh, it's impossible to figure out. People are just sharing great news that they, that they have.
Great news, blah, blah, blah.
But like the immediacy of like, okay, we're putting out this policy thing. We're putting out this video. There were like three things every day that needed to go out. And even like, here's another, we're doing this event tonight. We're doing that. Like, it was so varied in a way that was like really just like super invigorating and fun all the time. No, that's not true at all. At times it was extremely unfun, but like always really interesting. That honestly, just for like personal experience, extends to doing the homeless services stuff too. There's like so many different little jobs that have to be like taken care of at any given time compared to writing work, which does kind of feel like the same thing over and over again. Show running is different because there's more of the production stuff, but still there's a delayed release that I think podcast made difficult for me to accept. Sean and I never bank episodes. We're not organized to bank episodes. So we record on Saturday usually, and it comes out like 3 days later. And if it's bad, then we just do it again next week. It's like this immediate process that TV just operates on a schedule that is, I think, no longer as conducive to how the human mind works and our need for gratification at a more frequent release.
So, as you mentioned, she won.
She won.
What was that like for you?
It, you know, it was kind of stupid because I'm always thinking like, well, it would have been nice if we could have had a party. If we could have hugged each other.
Yeah.
Like, these were people I got really, really close to. It was a wonderful team. There were some other people who had worked in comedy and writing. There's a guy named Josh Androsky, who wrote for SpongeBob in the past and is a stand-up, who was also running the comms operation. And the people like Mitra Juhari and Joel Kim Booster and Adam Conover, and so many people I'm forgetting, but like really threw themselves into it, got super, super engaged. So it was kind of a merging of these different communities, but it feels great. I still hope we can have a party. It would just be nice to be around each other and be like, wasn't this cool? But she's been sworn in now, and I'm still kind of reckoning with that is real.
Yeah. You mentioned the other comedy related people that had got involved, and it felt like this race in particular was really embraced by the community. And I know people that credit partly you and your sort of championing of it and sort of just helping shepherd people through the process. When people have talked about politics and comedy these last 4 years, it's almost always like monologue jokes about Trump. But why I want to talk to you was you're involved in this part of the story, which is the story of how comedians have reacted to Trump. Did you learn anything or just see anything about what comedy can do when it's actually ingrained in the political process like this?
You know, I think most of like the comedy element of it was kept pretty separated. We did, I mean, this was ridiculous. For a city council campaign in LA, we had a show, comedy show at this theater, the El Rey, which is huge.
Yeah.
That had, I'm going to miss people, but Mitra and Joel hosted it. Karen Kilgariff, Adam Conover, Reggie Watts, Paul F. Tompkins, others who are escaping. James Adomian did a Chris Matthews impression. It was just like this incredible lineup. And we sold out the El Rey. Ended up making like $2 on the show because it's very expensive to rent out a theater.
Sure, yeah.
But it's not like the comedy was about, for the most part, city politics. Like people would make little jokes about it, but that wasn't the theme of the comedy. It was just a way to bring people to it. So I don't know if political jokes are the way to get people informed about something necessarily. Like, the campaign did some of that, but it wasn't really like a comedy-driven campaign.
Yeah,
stuff is like really serious.
Yeah,
you know, it's tough to make jokes about.
I guess the question is then: do you feel like there's something unique about this generation of comedy fans or young people that they would let comedians help influence their political beliefs in this way, regardless of like even if you're saying serious things?
Yeah,
but like, you were not like you did this campaign, but it's one of a zillion examples of charity shows for different causes. I've put on a few, and no one's like, "What are you doing that for?" Like, it felt everyone's like, "Yeah, of course, comedians would be doing these things." So what is that to you?
You know, I think it might be a generational thing. It might be just something in this community. It is a very morally driven group of people. And I think people get so like, look, you always are wondering, right? Always like questioning, am I doing this like because I for like the purest motivation possible, or because I like that the idea of people thinking of me this way,
sure,
or because it gives me social affirmation to be doing this kind of stuff. And at some point, I think it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, as long as you're doing it, and like if you do it enough, then that kind of goes away, and now it's just the thing that you do. And it is impossible to ever really, really know, certainly on a person-by-person basis. But I think it's twofold. I think people genuinely were looking for something to do, and we're very, like, twisted up about Trump. And also, people have different needs in terms of, like, what is what feels good in terms of their, like, public perception. Mm-hmm. Is it, like, getting, like, booked for, like, a bunch of roles and, like, being really rich? Or, like, does it feel better now when people look at you and say, like, wow, they're doing, like, really good stuff?
Yeah.
The need here is so massive. I think it's also, like, that is also, it's balanced by how just sick you feel driving around a lot of the time. Like, it's impossible to go around LA and not be like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, if like just seeing what's in front of you, and getting engaged is really an antidote to that.
I don't know if you listened to the famously stupid podcast Malcolm Gladwell did about satire.
I never did listen to that one. I like the one about golf courses. That's the only one I've ever heard.
So he did a thing about satire, and it doesn't really, he doesn't have, he just like satire's not good enough because sometimes people don't know what it means. And then he went on Larry Wilmore's podcast, and this actually was interesting because Larry Wilmore just explained to him how satire works. And Larry's main point was, well, comedians aren't activists. Comedians just point people to where they should be doing activism. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But as we've seen these last few years via what you've been doing, things like Mitra has been doing, where comedians are being activists, what do you think about this overlap? How is it, are comedians natural activists? What does it mean for comedians to not just be talking about things, but doing things?
None of it, though, none of this stuff is really satire. It's not like Jon Stewart.
No, of course,
And it's not like political parody. But I think that's an important distinction because the brand of comedy that we and all these people are doing is about like a weird bug with like a big ass or whatever. It has nothing to do with the political stuff. And that extends to like the city level. I think a lot of them are good, just really good communicators. That has real value, especially when you're talking about a city council race where you have to start with like, here's what this is. Here's this thing you've never heard of. And like, here are the different things that they have influence over, and here's what they can do. Like, you just need to be clear and kind of like drill down on stuff. And personality helps, like the same way that like, when you're doing stand-up, you need to convey an idea very directly and like get people to understand what it is. So I think it's more just about communication than it is about comedy specific or just like the overlap between those concepts. In LA, I think you had so many people who were really good at communicating who all, the vast majority went into the entertainment industry, and that left us with a city political sphere that like did not have people that were as good at that. So there was an opportunity for people in entertainment to turn toward city politics and really have a huge impact.
Yeah. So how's all this influence how you thought about your career and the career you want to have?
I mean, yeah, so I had considered, I was just waiting to see if Nithya won or lost to even start thinking about what I was going to do next. I was always going to continue doing the podcast with Sean. I love doing that. We just went independent. We just started a Patreon. We're growing it. But that was never going to be a full-time job for me. So like what I was going to do with the rest of the time is like, do I get back into writing? I think I am going to stay in this world for now and like work to help advance the kind of policy agenda that Nithya ran on. I think it helps to have outside voices continue to push that stuff.
In what forms?
We're figuring out the legal entities. You know, there's 501s, Jesse. I got to tell you, there's a bunch of them.
Got it.
And like, what do they do? Like, what do you go to jail for? Yeah. So I'll tell you this. I mean, this is everywhere in politics. Everyone knows this, but it's at the city level too. Every interest group that has a ton of money behind it, like the restaurant association, the police union, the oil and gas industry, has these outside organizations that like advance their policies and do communications and like influence public opinion. Mm-hmm. In general, the like progressive movement does not really have as much of that happening mm-hmm. in the city. It's more built up in other places. So I think some people from Nithya's team are trying to keep the momentum going and have an outside entity that is doing that work. Because we were outspent. We were running against the most expensive city council campaign in LA history.
Sure.
We were outspent in terms of PAC spending by $700,000 to $12,000. And we managed to overwhelm all those institutional forces and all that money just through being better at communication.
Yeah.
And the fact that tons of comedians, like I was talking about people more at my level, but Ike Barinholtz, Busy Phillips, Adam and Naomi Scott, Mike Schur, the whole Parks and Rec team, people really showed up. And now they are, you know, I've been thrilled to see that they're all eager to keep participating at the city level, especially now that Biden's in office. A lot of people are like, what now?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you hope? So much of the not just political comedy, but sort of like the focus of people who are comedians that it was around the idea of Trump.
Yeah.
What do you hope for our comedy or comedians for the next however many years?
You know, the stuff I like ideally won't be really influenced by, you know, the kind of stuff that Mitra and Joel are doing, that John Early and Kate Berlant do, like, Demi was incredibly generous with his time on the campaign. Like, it's not respondent to.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine what would be different now that Joe Biden is in office. And I hope it isn't really. But it's been nice that they can all be so vocal and all be so forward with their values. I think for a long time people were scared that talking about that stuff would make their comedy worse, make it more difficult for people to separate a dumb tweet from a political one.
Yeah.
But I think it's turned out okay for all of them. I guess my hope is that from a comedy perspective, it just doesn't change that much.
Do you think there's going to be a president who was once a comedian in our lifetime? Or governor?
It could happen, huh? Doesn't it happen? You always hear about like in Italy and Poland. I think
Slovenia had one.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily bad at it.
No.
I don't know what their comedy's like, but they seem to be not terrible presidents.
I think it could definitely happen. I mean, I just read... not Reaganland, but the book before that by Rick Perlstein, The Invisible Bridge. Mm-hmm. And Reagan was so successful, not because he was an actor, but because he was a host. He hosted this like General Electric Theater where he would do like stand-up commentary, not funny necessarily, but just the kind of like one guy with a mic delivering a message to someone. It's that kind of... parasocial, like this is my friend who is coming out of the TV and speaking to me, that we now have even more intensely maybe with podcasts and social media, that I think it could definitely happen. I think Jon Stewart probably regrets not having done it. I mean, I think people like without certain circumstances taking place, I think Al Franken at some point would have had a great shot.
Yeah.
So here's my answer. If it doesn't happen, The only reason I would say it couldn't happen is because the intersection of being a comedian and also wanting to be a politician probably means that you have bad stuff in your in your personal history that will emerge at some point. So that is going to be a huge hurdle to that ever happening. The comedians who I would most like to see do it won't.
Yeah. I think it's a good way of ending it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jesse.
You can listen to Hollywood Handbook wherever you listen to podcasts. Hayes also at this point has like a ton of Patreon podcasts, which you can check out at patreon.com/theflagrantones. Follow Hayes on Twitter at Hayes Davenport. And that's it for another episode of Good One. Good One is produced by myself, Jelani Carter, Hannah Rosen, and Camila Salazar. Gautam Srikishan did our theme song. Write a review and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Email any comments, questions, or laughing around suggestions to goodonepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at goodonepodcast. I'm Jesse David Fox, and you can follow me at Jesse David Fox. Good One is a production of Vulture in the Box Media Podcast Network. We'll be back next week with Jason Wallner. Have a good one.